Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. Today we're having a really important show with one of my favorite guests. He was on maybe about a year ago, Dr. Gene Dorio, a physician in California who practices on the front line, geriatric medicine, hospice care, and palliative care. And I know that I've been really impressed with his journal. It's like a diary called A Physician's Report, and I've been following it for the past couple years, but it's really gotten really, really timely, more so than ever, over the past, I guess, 2 or 3 months since you started the Physician's Diary. I put this on my Facebook page, and every time I do, the shares and the likes just go up exponentially. So I wanted to have Dr. Dorio on the show today to really give an update. What's going on the front line? You know, I have an office-based practice, so I'm not in the mix in the hospital and everything that goes on. I read about it. It's very disconcerting. It's soul, you know, numbing. But this is a doctor who actually cares, who actually is being very proactive about educating his patients. And I wanted to have him on to just tell us again what it's like now on the front line. Since Obamacare has passed, with all of this supposed reform, repeal, replace, whatever, which I don't think is ever going to happen personally. But I wanted to welcome you to the show, Dr. Dorio. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, Elena, thank you for having me on the show again. I appreciate it. And for those listening, yes, I'm in California, and I know you're in Atlanta, and today happens to be a very rainy day for you in Atlanta. And here in Southern California, you know, the sun is shining. So, you know, if you ever are inclined to move your practice to Southern California, I certainly will help you out.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. So frontline of medicine is still, as any frontline is, it's a difficult position to be in. Since we last talked last year, I think it was around October, you know, there have been things going on that really has stagnant. It's still stagnant in terms of physicians moving in any direction, and let alone the public. A lot of front headlines that talk about how medical care is being rendered, and it's being made by people in Washington, D.C., that whether you're on the right or the left, you know, they are problematic, because I've said in the past that the Congress people who make these laws certainly are not living under the laws that they make. They have their own health insurance, and but they're still being allowed to make decisions about the rest of the country that will not apply to them. And of course, to me, as an advocate, I think to make that a commitment and have them put skin in the game, what they need to do is they need to have their the first thing they should say in their law is that we will be living under the law that we make, and that will give us confidence that they will be making the best law. So in terms of being on the front line, you know, we're still out there. The people who run and have the financial means to be able to control everything are still doing it. And it's mainly the insurance companies and the hospitals and the pharmaceutical companies that have full control of us. And, you know, we don't, we really don't, even as physicians, let alone the public, have any say in this. And I don't see anything coming right now from Washington or even state government making a whole lot of changes, whether it be Obamacare, Trump care, or whatever. You know, there's this. Interests are playing too big of a role in all of this. So, yeah, front line, you know, I think that as doctors, we're really all on the front line, and we all need to be advocates. But, you know, Elena, what doctor has the time to be able to stand up and say this is wrong? You know, what doctor has the ability financially to risk the chance that they could be put in ruin by organizations like hospitals that might go after them? So that fear is still there, and it's hanging over our heads. And, you know, we still don't have a full direction that we can go, nor an organization that can help us do that. So, you know, on our small levels that we try to blog and our radio shows and TV shows that get out there, you know, I think we're starting to group and, you know, say common things, but I'm not sure yet on the front line whether, you know, it's like World War One when they were in the trenches for years. We're still mm-hmm. in the trenches.
I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, there is a growing number, fortunately, of doctors who are leaving their practice, going up to Capitol Hill, trying to get our story out. And we're meeting mm-hmm. resistance. I mean, a lot of lip service, a lot of talking, but nothing ever gets done. You know, I want people to understand, you know, when you say that the insurance companies and the big pharma has power, let's give a face to that. You wrote a report recently that talked about the fact, well, I guess it was not recently, but I just reread it because it was right up my alley because it's happened to me right now, where insurance companies can deny care, you get a peer-to-peer review, and that peer-to-peer is not liable. They don't care or carry any responsibility for their medical decisions. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that? Because that's really one of the linchpins of why insurance is so awful.
Exactly. For our listeners to know that physicians are placed in a position where they have to be their patient advocate, many a times, whether the patient is hospitalized or whether the patient is at home, we order testing and we do things in a hospital. And sometimes the insurance company micromanages and comes in and says, no, you can't do this. And so we have to then sometimes write letters or we have to make phone calls on a peer-to-peer and discuss with physicians who are at the other end, at the insurance company end, to convince them that our patient needs a certain testing or certain results, surgeries, that or even medication that we know they need, but the other side feels it costs too much money. So they fight us back on that, and we have to be convincing in how we present it. So, yes, I get on the telephone with insurance company doctors who do not see the patient. Sometimes, you know, they're looking at the EMR, the electronic medical record, to determine whether the need is there on paper or on the computer, but they don't ever talk to the patient, nor do they do a physical exam on the patient, and they're making decisions solely by what they see on the computer. And that's our job, is to then bridge the gap for them to understand why we're asking for something. And of course, this takes a lot of time and effort, but you know, it's worth it to our patients. But this micromanaging was never there. So what I've learned is several things, but one is that ultimate decision that comes out, if they say yes or no to what I'm asking for, if they say no, the doctor at the other end, the insurance company doctor, is not making a medical decision by law. They're making a utilization decision, and yeah. They supposedly cannot be held liable. Now, here in the state of California, the Board of Medical Quality Assurance that owns our license and licenses all doctors, they look at those doctors who work for insurance companies as making utilization decisions, not medical decisions. And, you know, I think that in itself is a problem, but the board has said that they want laws to strictly define that those different roles, and they don't have those laws. And, of course, legislators in the state of California are not going to do that. So they're making utilization decisions, not medical decisions. So what I do when I talk to these physicians and I get them on the line, you know, I mm-hmm. ask them their name and get the right spelling. I find out if they're board certified. I find out what their specialty they are in, and I tell them that I'm putting their name on the chart with their license number, if whatever state they come from, and that their name will be there in the ultimate decision making. And you know, sometimes that makes a difference in terms of the result. Sometimes it doesn't, because they feel I'm threatening them. But understand that this is becoming more and more prevalent, and it used to be not just hospitalizations, but and decisions and keeping the patient in the hospital and what we're doing and plans for that. But it also comes to when we're in the office, and even now there are, you know, the pharmaceutical companies will turn around and say, "Well, you can't give this medication, or this is not on our formulary anymore, and therefore you have to get prior authorization or new approval for these medications." This is all, you know, what we have to do for our patients to be advocates and fight back. But of course, now it's taking more time to be able to do that. And I've said before to my patients, when I'm having to deal with all the paperwork that's coming out, I'm spending more time with paperwork than I've ever spent before in my life. And it's fighting that effort and trying to be that patient advocate. You know, it just is, it's a big wall and a barrier for these companies now to micromanage. And they're making us do that for one reason. They're making us do that for their profit. They've hired lots of people at a lower level that they can make their profit. That's what they're doing. And because they're getting away with it and nobody's fighting them back, you know, we will continue to do this, and it will be even, the time factor will be even more enhanced for all of us in terms of trying to allow the medical care that we need to give to our patients.
Well, it's a conflict of interest. I mean, their fiduciary responsibility is to the insurance company. And the fact that they can practice medicine, I mean, I've been on the phone with people who are not within my specialty telling me what I can't do. Pediatricians, you know, or I think a psychiatrist at one point, frankly. And they don't care. But I think you're right. You know, ultimately, we need to put them on the hook. I would love to see legislation that would actually put the insurance company in a risk pool with us. Whatever they decide, we have to bear the brunt, and they get off scot-free. But we have the power of our medical boards, our specialty boards, standard of care, and what they come up with is not standard of care, but they can just deny it. Do you think that that's something, an avenue that we can explore to try to fix this?
Absolutely. But, you know, the first thing, Elena, that I had thought about since we had no ability to do anything about it was to address the physician at the other end of the phone call their life. And hold that above their head and saying, yeah, you really are making a medical decision. This is not just a utilization decision. And I testified last year in front of the Board of Medical Quality Insurance, our board here in California, and it's in the minutes that you know people can read about this whole problem. And you know, to be honest with you, the medical board in California didn't want to hear that because they want to hear from the legislators on that. But the legislators are not going to be the advocate for doctors or patients in this. Unfortunately, these people in government are influenced by big business and lobbyists, and so it probably will not happen. So instead, while we can't do a whole lot right now, and we need to move in a direction where we have better rules and controls. You know, right now I'm saying now let's take a look at those doctors who are doing this for whatever reason they're doing it and, you know, hold their license up in the air so they have responsibility, so they have to make better decisions for our patients. I think, at least here in the beginning, that's where we have to go. And after that, get our groups and organizations to be able to get the true legislation that is out there, other than going through the court system and making legal rules. you know, by judges to make it legislative rules that we can make the insurance companies, pharmaceutical companies, and even hospitals adhere to better care for our patients.
On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Thank you for your patience, listeners. I'm finally in the studio. And thank you again, Dr. Dorio, for your awesome, you know, just ability to move with it. Before the break, we were talking about the legislature and follow the money, really. That seems to be the mantra no matter what you do. You know, they are beholden to getting back in and to whoever's going to pay the money. And it hasn't seemed to have been the patient, the doctor, or the voter, for that matter. I mean, ultimately, unless we take the ball into our own hands, which is what you just described, the status quo won't be forced to change. So really, we have the power to do this. And that means every individual doctor, I'm going to do what you did the next time I have to deal with a peer-to-peer review and see what happens. Right now, we're in the, excuse me, in the midst of fighting for over a year to be paid by an insurance company. And it's arbitrary. It followed every single rule that Cigna wanted to pre-cert. We got the pre-cert number. And then after the procedure was done, they denied it, saying it wasn't medically necessary. And it's just been a real arduous task. And they want you to give up. They want you to not get the patient involved. These are all things that you have to do as a physician. We need to enlist the patient to fight the battle with us, honestly.
Absolutely. And that's why I think it's important for what you do, Elena, and what I do in terms of writing about it, and so many others doctor advocates are doing, is they're trying to let the public be involved in this conversation, this whole discussion concerning what is going on, what insurance companies are doing. You know, the profit in our system right now is abhorrent. And we, you know, there's just in our local paper, there was a article about the gross domestic product being 17.5% is healthcare. And the whole article talked about how things are going up, prices are going up, and, you know, the costs are going up. And, you know, we know as physicians that what we're getting paid, what others for procedures or whatever it is going down significantly.
Mm-hmm.
So those are going down, but what was ignored in this article was that the profit is going up, the profit for the CEOs of hospitals, the CEOs of pharmaceutical companies, insurance companies. You know, they're getting paid in the millions of dollars, their salaries, and that's part of the 17.5% of the GDP.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody's saying that there's a problem with that. And the public needs to know that a part of that 17.5% is somebody's salary. And it's these big folks who have taken over, understanding the profit motive. They've manipulated it so they're making money, but hiding it from the public. So you get a newspaper article that comes out that totally ignores the profit factor. And, you know, in the newspaper, people wrote comments and said, wait a second, elephant in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't you talking about the profit that the executives are making and their bonuses? Why aren't you talking about that? And they're not. They're just ignoring that. That's why I think that what we're talking about today, the public needs to know about. Will the public hear it? I think little by little we're pushing that forward. But, you know, It's taking a long time, and the public gets frustrated, and they don't know what they're frustrated about. And I think clarity needs to come from the physicians in what we're doing and trying to do right now.
I absolutely agree with that. I mean, I think we should bear some responsibility for the state of medicine. I know that when I graduated, we lost control over our delivery of care. I came out just at the time when capitation and HMOs were rising. and it was terrible. Patients hated it. The gatekeeping, the pre-certifications, before you can even get to see a specialist, they absolutely hated it. And we should have withdrawn our consent at that point. I remember when I opened my practice, I was told you have to get on every single insurance, otherwise patients won't come to see you. And right. we fell into that fear, oh my gosh, we devalued ourselves in that process.
And if there's no doubt about it, physicians and how they have organized or not organized have played a huge role and should bear that responsibility. But now that we've dug this hole and we're deep in it, we have to find ways of getting out of it. And I think it's going to need a total revamping of the system and how it's done. Will, though, as I alluded to earlier in our conversation, the American people say to the legislators that you have to have skin in the game. You have to be a part of the healthcare system, and your families do too. And will that change their motivation? I think it will, but it's not going to come where if we say that we didn't get paid for a 6-hour surgery and saving somebody's life, and complain about that. I don't think the public is going to say, that's okay. You'll make your money somewhere else and be able to pay for your big car and your mansion. That's solely how they look at it. And then until it affects them, which it is now, things are not going to change. The doctor organization should have long time ago stood up and said, we're not doing this, and this is how we're going to handle it. It didn't happen that way. There was a game plan made against a business game plan made against physicians and their profession, and now we're seeing the consequences of it.
I would go further, and I would say that our specialty boards and our administrative side of our profession have worked against us. They aligned themselves with this system, and they've been making money on us, too. We've been monetized. They're making money on maintenance of certification. They're making money on these courses to get certified. They're making people pay some crazy amount of money to, join their club once a year. Thousands of dollars for an organization that works against you. I refuse to do that.
And you're absolutely correct. I mean, but this has been set up to supposedly raise standards and maintain the care that is rendered by physicians. And I understand that. Listen, I'm all for assuring that doctors stay at a high standards, do not lose their skills, are tested all the time with their knowledge base. I mean, I think that's really important, but that does come many a times as you're practicing medicine, as you're being peer reviewed, whether you are sued or not. I think every doctor gets sued, and is that a reflection of their good care? Of course it is not, but it's one of the things that we look at. And when our own organizations turn around and make us being certified costing so much money per year, and take not only that, Elena, but our time, and then setting up these huge barriers and hoops for us to jump through, it's become almost outrageous. And I don't think that in the long run really serves the public. I think that yes, we have to assure that the medical professionals that are out there practicing have high standards. We have to make sure of that, that we cannot let our profession fail. But the way they've set it up now is outrageous, and it does not do what it's supposed to do, and then ends up costing doctors more time and money than they can really afford to be able to put into it.
I understand where you're coming from, but I take the opposite approach on this. We went into this profession with a higher standard. We took an oath, the Hippocratic Oath, to not be money grubbers, to be advocates for our patients, to do no harm. That is an oath that no other professional takes. I take it very seriously, and I don't need some pencil pusher bureaucrat to monetize me, to make me toe a line. I toe my own line, as do every single doctor out there. So I don't believe that they need to test us out the wazoo. I don't believe they need to make us pay and go leave our practices to make them money. I just don't.
And I agree. I agree 1,000% with that. But how are we going to let the public know or that this is what's going on right now?
By withdrawing our consent.
How are we going to let them know how we are affected, not just by our specialty boards and our boards, but also by the insurance companies and doing peer-to-peer? How does the public learn about that? And, my blog is just one of many that are out there, hundreds that are out there that where doctors are talking about this. But, we need organizations to focus for us that will help us clarify this so the public can see this and understand this and put it on their doorstep so they'll understand where we are coming from, also get us all on the same page so we can move forward. That is, to me, not happening yet, and my hope will be that in the future it will, but I'm just not sure yet how that we're going to be able to organize that.
Well, I know we have to take a break, but before we go, I want to make two statements. It is happening every day on a very organic level, on a commando level. Withdrawing your consent from the system is how we take our power back. This whole system will not work unless there's doctors to see a patient, write a prescription. Why don't we stop playing their game? Why don't we go for wellness instead of drugging someone to the nines? Why don't we stop working in these hospitals who use us as, labor? That's how we do it. On that note, let's take a break and we'll revisit it when we come back. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call. And I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out of pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Jean, before the break, I'm sorry, I was getting a little passionate about my feelings on this, but it's a personal responsibility on both the doctor and I would have to add, and the patient. I think patients have been given lip service and they've been done a disservice that you can just walk in somewhere and expect everything to be done with a pill and that you don't have to bear any responsibility for choices you make to stay healthy, that we can just fix it. That's a problem. I mean, personal responsibility needs to start being the focal point across the healthcare system.
And absolutely. And, as physicians, we take personal responsibility, but as individuals, we all need to. And I think to a certain degree, at least in the community I live in, people exercise, they get out, they move around, they get into shape, they go to the gym. It doesn't matter what age group you're in, from youngsters to oldsters, they're out there doing that. They go to the farmer's market, they go to Whole Foods and Trader Joe's and places where they can find healthy foods, and people are starting to understand that and knowing that they want to live longer and they want to live in a better way. But also they might be seeing threats from the whole system itself that if they don't take care of themselves, they might there might not be an insurance company or a system that will care for them also. So maybe they're living in fear that they have to, you know, take more responsibility. And I do see that at least here in the area that I live in, and that personal responsibility has to continue. I think that's on the rise at this point. Mm-hmm. But then again, you're going to get some people that just will not get up, will not exercise, will eat their fast foods and their sweets, and they're going to get themselves into trouble. And so I'm hoping that we'll be able to sway people in a better way to better health on their own and take that personal responsibility. I think we are, though, indeed moving in that direction, but that's going to take a while, and you're always going to have the slugs in life that are not going to try and just expect that, because I don't think everybody's going to get on that health bandwagon.
No.
But for the most part, I think we are doing that, at least in our community here in California.
Well, I'm a big fan of choice. The problem with the system now is that it's trying to drive everybody into a collective. Everybody should think the same way. Everybody should get the same medications. Everybody should get vaccinated, whether or not they meet a criteria that they need to be. I mean, all of these things are about centralization and control. That's what I'm against. If you like Obamacare, you should keep it. I don't think it's going anywhere, Gene. Honestly, it's like an octopus that has got its tentacles on every every piece of our healthcare system. What people really want is choice. If you don't want that, you should not have to pay into a system that works against you. That's where we come in. You know, if you actually give people the truth that it costs multiples, 10 times, 15 times, 20 times more to see a doctor in a hospital-based practice versus someone is in an independent practice, that you're going to pay thousands of dollars more for an ultrasound or a CT if you get it at your typical hospital versus a freestanding center, a radiology center. These are things that people actually don't know. And your blog is really very effective at just laying out the facts with examples. I love the one about the medication too. So, being on all these meds, and I've said it on my show before, I challenge my listeners to go to their medicine cabinet, pull everything that they've been prescribed, take it to their doctor, and clean house. Ask them, do you really need to be on all of these medications? What can you do to get off of them? That's a key thing. I mean, you talked about a patient who was actually, had a side effect from a medication, ended up, once you cleaned out their system, they were actually better. Imagine how many thousands of millions of people that would actually work on.
I think we've been inculcated with the thought that take a pill and you're going to be better. And, of course, with our senior population who, really were very compliant patients, when they were told by their physician that, you have to take this drug, they would take it. And even with the side effects, they might say, well, I still have to take it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're very right. We need to have these choices and awareness that that maybe it's not the right thing. And, sometimes the patient does not see it, but you hope the people around them, their caregivers or loved ones or families, will turn around and say, wait a second, my mom, my dad, they're on too many drugs, and bring these to the drugs in and to the attention of the physician.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great that I think that on a personal level people are trying to be their own advocate. But the sad part, the other side of the coin, is that that when you do see your doctor, for some for some patients, it's like for 10 to 15 minutes. So you have to be very organized when you go and see your doctor. You have to have everything lined up and say, this is what I got. What can I get rid of? You know, is this going to hurt me? And this is costing too much money. You have to be that advocate for yourself, because if you're not, you're not going to end up in the long run having those personal choices that you do want to have. So it really is up to the patient to and the families to be their own advocates. And, you know, by having radio shows and blogs, like I've said, put this information out, it will educate the public to ask questions and be their own advocates mm-hmm. as well.
You know, I would go one step further. Do that. And if your doctor doesn't, if he's not or she is not amenable to it or they're hostile to it, move on and get another doctor. Yeah. You know, keeping this, you know, doing the same thing, expecting a different result is not helping the system. This system is it's Leviathan. You can't move this thing with, you know, a little nudge. You have to be very persistent. And, you know, you have to withdraw your money and your consent. That is the only thing that these guys seem to understand. You know, you don't vote for people who work against you. You don't pay money into a system that works against you. You don't give your business to something that treats you poorly. If you're not valued as a patient, and you really are a customer just as much as you're a patient, why are you still going there? You know, you never see the doctor.
And I agree,
minutes.
And I think that one important thing, Elena, is that, you know, even for our seniors who are not adept at the computer, there mm-hmm. are ways of getting better information online or in other places that will educate you about especially your medications, but it can educate you about your treatment plan. Mm-hmm. It could educate you about a test that you might have. And when you go in armed with knowledge and information, you're better educated and you're a better advocate for yourself. So, you know, take advantage of the technology of 2017 and make sure that, you know, when you're going to see your physician, you are armed with that information, because it could be patients will come in and say, well, I'm not going to take this because it has, you know, this side effect or that side effect. And, you know, a worthy physician will give a explanation of the value, weighing the good and
exactly.
the bad of it. And but if you go in without that information, you might think to yourself, well, I'm right as a patient, and I'm going to change doctors because of it, when in there is a possibility that, you know, your doctor is being reasonable in their assessment. You know, I think doctors do really well in terms of their knowledge base and giving that information to their patients for the most part. But, you know, sometimes you have to be, as a patient, go in with the knowledge and the reading and the background to be able to have that discussion with your doctor. And if you don't do that, don't have the background, and you're shooting off the top of your head, then you could end up being in trouble for your final decision making.
I agree. And it's about communication. And we're not talking about doctors, you know, really awesome doctors in 007s here. We're talking about doctors who have the time to answer a question. It's demeanor. It's the art of the medicine, of medicine, where you actually have rapport and a communication and a relationship. That's what's been stripped out of this system.
Oh,
it's algorithm-driven.
Yeah.
You're looking at most people now, looking at a computer, you know, treating based on numbers instead of the person to get you in and get you out, get your 30 to 60 patients a day. I can't even imagine seeing that many people a day. That's not
yeah.
seeing anybody. It's a conveyor belt. But the patients really drive this. If you don't show up to these offices, they will have to figure out why and change their method. That's the free market in action. You know, direct primary care doctors are seeing less patients per day, but their patients are the happiest, the most well cared for, with the best, you know, the cheapest care delivered. You know, we look at it as a continuum. They're getting the most efficient care at the lowest rate. And that's really what it should be about. Not paying more for less, but getting value for what you're doing.
Absolutely. I agree 1,000% with that. And, you know, we talk about time and we talk about the physicians, and you know, when I was in residency easily 35 years ago, you know, we were taught to ask pertinent questions also that get you into deeper depth of who that patient is and where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. And now I see when I have to review charts at our hospital, I see patients coming in and the doctors really don't know the patient at all. They don't know, you know, where that they fought in World War II, that they were, they got a Bronze Star for heroism. They don't know that what kind of job that they worked at and what exposures they might have had. They don't know anything about if they're married or if they have children and where they're living and what kind of living situation. None of that is in the chart anymore. None of that. You know, it seems to be pertinent to the physicians taking that history, but to me, it's a part of understanding where your patient is coming from and sometimes why they're making certain decisions that you might not understand. But we've lost that humanitarianism and understanding to give the patient the empathy that they need because we're not spending the time to be able to gain, you know, information that is really of value but is now being ignored by the many of the physicians that are taking care of our patients. It's terrible that, you know, for me as a primary care doctor, as an internist and geriatrician, you know, I know my patients well. Some of them I've known for, you know, 30 years. Mm-hmm. I know where they're coming from. I know what they want in life. I know what their quality of life is all about. And I know the direction they want to go and how they want to handle end of life. And that continuity allows me to give them better care. But when you have just people, a doctor coming in, you know, for 5 minutes and saying, who are you, what's your problem, what's your symptoms, and putting that down on paper and then trying to find a plan, many a times the plan is skewed because there are other things that are playing a role that the doctors haven't taken into account. So continuity with me knowing and understanding, mm-hmm. you know, where my patient has been and where they want to go makes a huge difference in how I am able to care for them.
That's what it should be about. And imagine, too, from an economic standpoint, you wouldn't be necessarily ordering all these tests because you don't know. I mean, I think that's another thing that gets lost in the soup. All of these algorithms in the hospitals and the standard of care, managed care, whatever you want to call it, meaningful use, there's a lot of extra testing that goes on. You know, getting the hemoglobin A1C once a year, doing all these things as a standard cafeteria, when they may not mean as much, but they cost a heck of a lot of money. And then you end up treating people who are pre-something, pre-diabetic, pre-hypertensive. Since one of these folks need a pre-hypercholesterolemia, since one of these people have to go on medication instead of diet change, lifestyle change, it's always medicine, a medication as the front line of care, which jacks up the price. But in the 15 minutes or so that we have left, I actually want to touch and ask you a question about something.
Okay.
Medicare for all has been one of the mantra that's been put out there by the folks who love single payer. And I personally think Medicare is not awesome, but you deal with it every day. And you mentioned in one of your reports about a two-tier level of care. And I want our listeners to understand that. You said in your blog that you thought that someone on Medicare had a different standard of care than somebody on commercial insurance. Can you just go into that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the Medicare patient and Medicare has been a good system to a certain degree. You know, I do house calls, so I am able to see a different viewpoint of how patients are. But, you know, Medicare has its faults too, but I think they have listened to the doctors at certain times that has allowed them to improve the care of our senior population. So, you know, the the Medicare patient is faced with something called a DRG. And the DRG is the government saying that you got 4 days in the hospital for pneumonia. And with that, you only get 4 days, and the hospital is only going to get paid 4 days worth of care, and which is an abomination in itself, but that's how they do it. And to a certain degree, that does help to statistically sometimes, but you're always going to find seniors who are outside that realm. So, and, you know, for some, for a lot of our senior patients, they come in, and at 4 days, they are, the hospital is saying, kick them out, send them to a nursing home. Mm-hmm. Whereas with, when you're under 65 and you have, you do have insurance like private insurance, you know, I would, on occasion, I have those patients in the hospital, and they're not the same kind of evaluation that is given to our senior patient. To get them out in 4 days is not given to those who have insurance. So therefore, the hospital never comes after me and says, hey, it's 4 days for this patient who has private insurance. You got to get them out. It never happens. They never come to me, and they never yell and scream about the cost of that, because guess what? They're making money for every day. So Medicare for All and the private insurance, you know, they are different degrees, but there's going to be at some point, I think, a mix for our patients that will be a lot better than what we're seeing now. Statistically, you can say, yeah, for a 21-year-old with pneumonia, yeah, you can keep them just for 4 days. But for a 95-year-old who might have pneumonia, they're going to have other problems that will keep them in for a longer period of time. And we should allow for that DRG to be longer so that you're not pushing them out too early. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, patients, of course, as you know, they'll get readmitted to the hospital, unfortunately, and have further problems that, that come from that when you discharge them too soon. So there's a dichotomy between the tiering system that we have in this country. The Medicare patient, who are the older patients, who are being shooed out of the hospital, whereas under 65 and you have insurance, they're being kept longer for bigger profit for the hospital and other people who are involved in the profit motive. So, yeah, it's a two-tier system, unfortunately, that we have in this country. And I think we're going to have to figure out how we are going to deal with it. And, you know, Elena, other countries around the world are figuring this out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we need to look at the models from around the world and see what we might be able to adapt to our system here. Will that happen? Well, like I've said now for the third time, you know, that, you know, the Congress people don't follow the same plans that we have. They're making laws for us, but they're not following those laws. And once we put them under those laws, they'll make better laws for us. But right now, they're not going to do that. They're going to find some system that I think is being tweaked by the lobbyists and special interest groups.
Oh, I'll even be more upfront about it. They're getting paid to keep the status quo. And their job at this point, because they're carved out, is to make a pipeline from the taxpayer to these entities that are driving the cost drivers of our healthcare system. There's no way you can tell me that an $80 billion trust fund for an insurance company to supposedly lower the premiums and out-of-pocket costs is going to be used for anything but a CEO salary or a new location. I just don't believe it, right?
You're absolutely right.
And they had the nerve, the unmitigated gall, to call themselves a small business, Congress, I mean, in order to get carved out and to get these subsidies, up to 70% subsidies for their health care premiums, while the average Joe is up there maybe giving up their health care because they can't afford their premium or their out-of-pocket cost. It's obscene. And ultimately, they don't have the right and the moral or ethical right to tell us, the people who have to live on the front line, that we should like it and take more of it. That's wrong. But as long as we keep voting for these people and they use the emotion stick, you want people to die, you know, it's all about class warfare and all sorts of warfare. Meanwhile, they who stands to gain? They stand to gain by making us fight each other while we take our eye off the ball, while they keep doing the same thing and taking our money to prop it up. I see the bigger picture. I'm just not going to play the game. And ultimately, if they start the mantra of healthcare is a right, that's going to be the death knell to our profession. Because I think that once something is a right, we have to give up our services for free and like it. That's slavery. I'm not doing it. And I can imagine a majority of doctors who see that and understand it will stop being physicians in this system. Then what are you going to be left with?
And that's the sad part, because I think by forcing us into the system without our input on how it's going to be run is detrimental to overall patient care.
It's true. And the people who lose are the Medicare patients, the Medicaid patients, and the working poor. Those are the people who are on the outside looking in, and this system is not inclined to work for them. We just described why. It's substandard compared to commercial insurance, Medicare. And I mean, under Obamacare, they actually instituted rules that made it worse. So if you get readmitted with the same diagnosis within 30 days, the hospital won't be paid, right?
That's right. And that's an abomination, because, and you know, at some point, the doctors will get dinged as well. And how do you, when you tell a patient who's in congestive heart failure, don't eat potato chips and, you know, stop your smoking, and they go home and eat potato chips and continue smoking, you know, the patient's going to come right back in.
Right.
We have no control over that, but it seems as if they're claiming that we do, and how we go about doing that is far beyond what our medical care can do for them.
I agree. And you're considered to be a bad physician because your patient bounced back. So again, this is really unusual. The physicians bear full responsibility for anything bad that goes on in this system. And I'm just not going to play that game, because it's not us that's doing it. We're 7 cents of the healthcare dollar. We don't make most of the decisions anymore about patient care. The insurance companies are running the show. And they have free rein to do it, as you just described. What I love to see is, why isn't there anything talking about lowering the cost of healthcare? That never gets talked about. It's about coverage. It's not about cost. And if they ask the physician and patient, what do you need to make it better? I think they would get easy answers that would work for 99% of the people. And it's common sense. They don't want that, though, because they don't
Maybe
get to control it.
Maybe they should come to the front line.
I agree.
And, you know, in Vietnam, you know, I think our military decided that we got to go to the front line and ask those soldiers who are fighting the war what we should do. And, you know, I don't think in Korea or in World War II they did that, but in Vietnam they did. And I think now they have to take that thought, that education, and go to the front line and ask doctors like you and me who are there what our opinions are and what might work for our patients and the care that we're giving the citizens of the United States.
You know, Gene, I have to tell you, I spoke with one of the aides on Capitol Hill, and his attitude was, they don't care. They don't care that we're struggling. They don't care that we're committing suicide in record numbers. They don't care that we are losing our profession. That's a win for them.
Yeah.
Never talk about how you feel as a physician. It should always be about something else, but never us. So I'm not sure that's really going to work, because they have disdain for us. They don't like us. They don't. First of all, we're one of the most free-thinking, independent people out there. We open our own practices. We run our own show. We are inclined to think as, you know, we want to do our own thing. They don't want that. They want someone who they can control. They control 1/6 of the economy. They control someone's health. That's a heck of a lot of power. And they can see that. They don't want to give it up. But we do have the ultimate power, like you described. We can talk to our patients. This is what this show's about. This is what your blog's about. Patients need to work with us. Finally, we together can fix this system, withdraw our consent, have a separate parallel track where it is about communication, about transparency, about wellness. I think there's a growing number of patients, like you described, who want that. We need to cater to those people. Those that don't get it, they should be happy in the system and good luck. But for those that don't, there is an answer. We are the answer. We don't need a ton of people. We just need a small percentage to make a difference.
I agree, and I thank you for, you know, your radio show. I thank you for being an advocate. I will try to keep my end up on this, too, from the doctor's viewpoint and for the public as well. you know, I think that as we step forward and move forward, it will be, it will help our nation move forward too.
I absolutely agree. In the 30 seconds we have left, how can people reach you and read your blog?
Well, it's SCV, which stands for Santa Clarita Valley, scvphysicianreport.com. So they can, you know, if they need to get on, they can go to the site itself. And if they want to go on my email list, they can, you know, hit contacts. And from there, I'll, you know, put your name and your email address, and I'll put you on my email list.
Well, Gene, thank you for everything that you do and all the work. It's much appreciated, and I'm happy to be in the trenches with you, and I hope you'll come back in the future.
Thank you, Elena. I appreciate your having me on the show. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Have a wonderful day, and thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.